This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and it is Tuesday. And you know what that means, folks? That means it's Mayor Tuesday.
We get to talk to Chuck Bennett here
yet again. We're going to take advantage of his time while he's here. I don't know if we're going to get him back after he goes on vacation this month. He might get filled with budget meetings or things like that. But anyway, welcome to Newsmakers. Newsmakers is the place to hear about news and happenings in the Willamette Valley here on KYKN. I don't think anyone else is doing it, so it's up to you and me, Dave.
That's right. We got to hold the fort.
Initiatives and individuals and ideas and institutions here on Newsmakers at your noon hour.
That's great.
Every Monday through Friday.
Congratulations on doing this.
Oh, thank you.
Great.
Yeah, we're having fun. Hopefully the listener is enjoying it as well and learning something. So Mayor Chuck Bennett, thanks for coming in again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's it like to be mayor? I want to get to, we've been talking about volunteerism and Salem.
Oh, yeah.
And you're retired now, but you weren't retired when you were a counselor.
Yeah.
Were you retired when you got elected as mayor?
No.
Yeah. So you had a full-time job.
I did a couple years as mayor, and then I'm doing my second couple years employed as mayor. and now I'm retired and doing mayor. It's a really interesting job. You have contact with just really the entire community in a whole variety of ways. It's a busy schedule. I mean, I could run through it with you. I don't keep a timesheet. I think it's around 30 to 40 hours a week.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If you do it right. I mean, there's ways to do it. I know that you could cut back on it, but really, to get it done right, you've got to spend quite a bit of time meeting with people, reading, getting yourself prepared for meetings. I think counselors expect you to know what the issues are and to be of assistance as you're moving through issues at meetings, which means you got a lot of reading to do.
Yeah, you got to stay ahead of the game.
Yeah, you do.
Okay,
you
need to. The learning curve. is 2 years the right term for Salem mayor?
No, it's really not. I think it really ought to be four, or it's either four or six. And the reason I say that, right now, every 2 years, we elect a whole new majority of the city council, four city councilors and the mayor. And the way that's done is by having the mayor up every 2 years. That means you're sort of on as mayor, then on as candidate. 1 year mayor, 1 year candidate. Mm-hmm. And it gets a little confusing, I think, to kind of keep track of it. But I think it also doesn't allow you time as you look at fairly substantial initiatives you'll be working on to really get them on the ground and moving, and then have people measure whether you're getting it right or not. 2 years is a very short period of time, particularly for people coming on to the council or on to being mayor with no experience at all in mm-hmm. city government.
I think it would be hard for somebody to be productive if they hadn't even been a counselor, and they hadn't been through a budget cycle, they hadn't dealt with the planning commission and all these other things.
Yeah, it takes time. And I know mayors who have been able to come on and get things done, but they've been on for maybe 6 years. First couple years can be really tricky because you just need to understand what the issues are, understand your city council. For city councilors, really, and the mayor, understanding what your role is in a council manager form of government. A lot of folks, I got a call from a local reporter who covers City Hall. Now, are you a strong mayor or a weak mayor? Which was the wrong way to ask the question. Neither, really. What I am is the mayor in a council manager form of government. Mm-hmm. And that is a role that involves you heavily in policy, you become very, at least in my experience, I have, a very good advisory relationship with the city manager and him with me. And I, because I'm familiar enough with Salem, I've been here over 50 years, and city government I've been involved in for 40, I am able to come up with various initiatives and understand how they fit into the context of this type of government.
Yeah, and for the listener, the city manager is the executive, and he runs the corporation that is the city. And the mayor and the council, they get to hire and fire exactly one person under our charter, under a city charter here in Salem. So they do find, they call that a strong city manager, you know, weak mayor, kind of form of government, which is cities the size of Salem is pretty universal.
Yeah, well, it's, I am convinced that, and Portland is starting to look at this form of government. They have a strong council and a mayor who appoints councilors to run bureaus, literally to be the managers of city. It's and I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to be critical of Portland, but
I'll
I will.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll go ahead. It doesn't work very well. It has not resulted in either efficient or, in many, many cases, effective government.
Yeah, I mean, in Portland, they could elect somebody who has been educated and trained to be a dentist, but had never employed more than two people, say, right? It'd be a dentist. It could be a shop worker. It could be anything. That doesn't mean they have any of the skills required to run a corporation the size of Portland.
Right.
Well, like, and you're hiring, you're electing a CEO on personality and policy, but not skill set.
Well, remember, they're also running like the Water Bureau, the Street Bureau, the Cop Bureau, the Fire Bureau. They're literally the commissioner in charge of those areas. And the result is you get these turnover, you get questions about how funds are spent from various bureaus on various projects that are unrelated to that bureau. All in all, I really do believe that these large corporations, Salem is an over a $400 million corporation annually. That's our annual budget, in excess of 400, getting closer to a half billion. You don't want a guy fresh off the street, essentially running that show. It is not the most efficient way to do it. And this council manager form of government grew out of what was called at the time the progressive era, which was really looking at government and trying to clean it up, create a more professionalized government back at the turn of the 20th century.
Wow.
So,
yeah, it goes back. I mean, the mayor here, Mayor Bennett, was a lobbyist. And so you want a lobbyist, and then here's the keys to a $400 million corporation.
Well, it's just crazy.
Right? Same with any of us, really. And being a mayor, obviously, is not for the thin-skinned, the faint of heart, somebody who doesn't have a lot of time on their hands. People have to work full-time and have kids, and they're in that stage of life. It's probably not a good candidate to serve this mayor.
Right. But it's a challenging, but you know what? If you enjoy it, it doesn't feel like the amount of time you're spending is the issue. It's really being able to engage in as many activities in your community as you possibly can. So I go to a whole variety of things. I mean, it's kind of fun to look back, and I will at some point and see all the different events. I think this week I'm going to meet with the Consul General of Israel. I'm going to meet with, I mean, that's the kind of stuff. I'll get people from Singapore or, you know, coming in on a regular basis. I've met with today with some board members and the staff at CCTV to kind of talk about where that organization is going. I'll meet with a newcomers group out at Illahi tomorrow. Tomorrow I'll be speaking to the Multicultural Society. I mean, it's that kind of stuff. Lots of that kind of stuff. Always something for the mayor.
Yeah. Things taxed on your mind. Yeah, we want to talk about some of the governance things. We're going to tell you the limited amount that we understand about how PERS is affecting the city budget moving forward.
That's what we know, right?
A little
there.
Bit about yeah. A little bit about
homeless that topic.
And how the expectations of us and the citizens in Salem may not align with actually what a municipal government is designed to do, is capable of doing. So hold on for that, folks. We're going to take a quick break. This is Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
You know it's important to maintain your home and business properties and to be prepared. Often your heating and cooling systems are overlooked. Call Home Comfort, Inc., a Lennox dealer, and have your system serviced or even replaced with a new Lennox system. These new systems are smaller and more efficient and will keep your home at the perfect temperature all year round. Lennox and Home Comfort, Inc., they make a great team. Visit them online at homecomfortinc.com. CCB number 113253.
You've been there, right? You put on that jacket you haven't worn in like 6 months. Reach into the pocket and find a McCafe brewed coffee. Well, not really, but there is a crumpled old dollar in there. And on McDonald's 1-2-3 dollar menu, that's the price of any size McCafe brewed coffee or a savory sausage biscuit. Oh, and check the other pocket too. Could be a tasty sausage McMuffin in there. Find more $1 breakfast favorites on the 1-2-3 dollar menu at McDonald's. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Tax extra.
The entire month of March, Color Tile wants to invite you as they celebrate over 60 years of great floors during Carpets Plus Color Tile's anniversary sale. Experience luxurious AlterTouch carpet made out of Ancel nylon or hardwood floors as low as $2.99 a square foot. Plus, they're offering 12 months financing. So come join the celebration. They're in Academy Square across from the Lancaster Mall. Carpets Plus Color Tile,
America's floor store. Salem's local talk show, Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, is every weekday at high noon. For 1 hour, we'll discuss issues that affect the Mid-Valley. It's common sense, facts, and local talk. It's Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires, and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne and the mayor of the city of Salem, Chuck Bennett. And now we got to learn a little bit more about what it's like to be mayor and what he does. Let's talk about some of the nitty-gritty stuff that it's a little bit more dry. Okay, so PERS and the budget, because I know you're going through a budget process each spring. And it's always a matter of, you know, where we're going to allocate resources and such. So we read all the time, Mayor, about PERS is getting worse. This is worse. Our unfunded liability is bigger. What the cities and the school districts are going to have to contribute as a percentage of payroll is getting higher and higher. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, a lot of people who are especially fiscal conservatives, you know, we know we did away with Tier 1 PERS in about 2002. So nobody in the last 17 years has been hired as a Tier 1 person.
They're still alive, though, you know.
Yes, they're still alive, and many are still working and building Tier 1 accounts. And it seems like all the reforms. I get in trouble with my conservative friends, Mayor.
I understand. And
because I have accepted that we've done all the reforms we can do practically, because all the other ones that we did got turned over overturned by the courts.
That's correct.
So, but now we're looking at the cities and school districts having to contribute 18, 20, 22, 25% of their payroll.
Yeah.
Which means if someone makes $100,000, you got to put $25,000 into their retirement. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I mean, an employer's contribution to Social Security Medicare, 7.65%.
Yeah.
7.65% funds the employer's part of Medicare and Social Security.
Right.
We're talking about 25%. Going to PERS. Mm-hmm. How's the city going to cope?
It's a very difficult problem. It's one that challenges every level of government in the state. It's one that was built over the past 45 years mm-hmm. by the state legislature. And because it applies to all public employees, it affects every public employee in the state who is mandatorily covered by PERS. This isn't like mm-hmm. optional situation. And when you look at the charts, and you're correct. I think every reform idea has been tested to see if, and there are some minor things. I think there'll always be a little bit going on around PERS, but nothing that bends the curve. And when I say bends the curve, when you look at the cost of PERS, it's going to go up for probably almost the next to almost 20 years. It'll be going up slowly, but we will hit substantial parts of payroll going into the retirement system. The reason for that is particularly the tier one employees who've been working over the years are living longer, and their beneficiaries are living longer. Mm-hmm. And this is the retiree plus beneficiaries issue in terms of the longevity of this. You look about 20 years out, and you can see the curve turn back down. And that's when the reforms that you talked about really kick in, because there's no more tier one people left alive. It's that, it's kind of that kind of a system.
Mayor, let me ask you a question on that.
It's difficult.
Does it get more and more beneficial then for municipalities, counties, school districts to outsource? Because the private sector can then provide a service without having a PERS obligation on top of whatever the wages and benefits are.
Yeah, I think if we outsource a great deal in the city of Salem already, and certainly I know that the staff, the management at the city looks regularly at, is there a different way we can do some of the services, particularly the really labor-intensive, very expensive services. So a lot of that is outsourced. But you don't outsource your cops. You don't outsource your fire, okay? That's over half of the budget mm-hmm. right there mm-hmm. is the police and fire. Generally, you can outsource paving and things like that, but—
Park maintenance?
That's nothing. I mean, you really got to find something that's worth it to get when we're talking in millions and millions of dollars. We could, I guess, outsource it if somebody came in and bid it. Mm-hmm. But that's not a huge, a lot of that's being done by a contracted labor with the state penitentiary and the county jail. So you got to kind of look at how that's being done and recognize, at least at this point, to my knowledge, those prisoners are not on PERS. Mm-hmm. So we're not paying PERS for them. We're paying a contracted fee.
And that's,
so,
that's,
but
that's
when
good,
you look at,
benefit.
When you really look, remember too, I think, Brent, it's really important so people get a sense of what the city's budget looks like. Your property taxes, everyone in Salem aggregated, every property tax they pay does not pay the full cost of police and fire. They do not pay enough in property taxes to cover just police and fire. That does not include parks, does not include the library, does not, you see, mm-hmm. That whole area in the general fund is not covered, planning, things like that. So, I don't think people fully realize just what the situation is like.
And it's not like our police officers are making extraordinary amounts of money more than, you know, Eugene or Tualatin and like jurisdictions, because that's how collective bargaining works. And it's not like we have enough cops. Honestly, I am big pro for public safety.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm looking at police officers, and to me, the ratio is how many police officers do you have per 1,000 employees?
That's correct. We need about 9 more right now.
We need 9 just to get to what our goal is, yeah. right? But not what the national
exactly.
standard is. Of course,
exactly.
Salem doesn't have the crime problem that Chicago has,
no.
right?
Thank goodness.
Yeah. But I think we were, for a long time, we were fighting to try to get 1.5 police officers per 1,000.
That's correct.
And we're not at that. I think now our goal is what, to maintain 1.2, 1.1? Where are we?
Somewhere in there.
Yeah. So into, so nine police officers, the chief, bless him, would like to add to the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And could you come up with an extra $1 million, please, Mayor? Because that's about what it costs to add nine police officers.
Well, at this point, no. It is the reality is, I think when we look at this year's budget, when it arrives, the city manager writes it and will bring it to us, we're going to see proposed cuts in the budget. One of the things that's happening, and we've talked about this before, but I want to bring it up, the city's the expectation of the citizens has changed, and where we traditionally we've been streets, sidewalks, police, fire, parks, and library, pretty mm-hmm. much. And then there's some mandated planning and things like that. All of us, really not all of a sudden, over the past few years, we've had a real change in public expectations, and now it's social services. We've never done that before. The city is not even geared for that kind of service. But as I hear from the public, it's every question is preceded by, and what about the homeless? And what about the homeless? Traditionally, they have been handled by the state and county governments. Mm-hmm. We now are being asked to pick up costs that we've never seen before. So we're trying to rebalance all of this. And we're talking a couple million bucks worth of costs associated with just our current homeless program.
Wow. And that's true. I mean, it's a black hole because you cannot spend enough money on the homeless because they're never going to go away. You can't solve the issue. And when you you take a municipal entity that has not done this role, and you're they're like the mayor just said, they're not geared to do it. They don't have the staff to do it. They have an expertise to do it. They don't have, you know, a master plan. And those are things that have been picked up by county health departments, you know, the state and social services.
And that's really the health, mental health, and addiction issues. We have done housing through our housing authority, mm-hmm. which is kind of a separate unit of government, although it's still the city council acting as
and it's federal authority. Funds though
and it's federal like, funds
and it's a federal role
and we're housing right now over 3,000 low income as well as could be homeless, also pulling homeless people into housing. We have a very large program housing people here in this city. We're now though adding as well wraparound social services. If you're going to help a homeless person, you don't put them into a tent in the mud. I know there's a large group here in Salem that think that's their religious obligation to do that. I happen to disagree. I guess I read a different Bible. It suggests a different approach, which is a housing-first approach with wraparound services that you're going to deal with a complete person and assist them in changing their lives and living longer. So we have some debate going on here. Why don't we put tent communities in Bush Park, and I say that's not a really good use of Bush Park at this
Amen.
Point.
Thank you for that.
You bet.
Stick with it because, you know, the city literally doesn't have a health and human services department.
That's true.
That is not the city's role.
No, it's the county.
It's a tough question. I mean, I'm as frustrated as every other citizen
with
the homeless. I think it becomes unsightly and it becomes in some aspects, dangerous and uncomfortable, especially for a vulnerable person on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So it is an issue. It's not like we're all feeling it, but then there's the reality is who should be dealing with it.
Yeah.
I know you preach and Salem operates on a collaborative effort. So I'm glad that the city of Salem is at the table because you have to work with the county people. You have to work with the state people. You have to. But if you take away my police officers, $2 million for the homeless, but we don't have $1 million to get the number of cops that we need. Right.
But I'll tell you, the one thing we do have in Salem that I am extremely proud of, we have a very successful Union Gospel Mission, very successful Salvation Army. We have churches who step up on a daily basis to work with folks in real serious trouble. We have a large recovery community here mm-hmm. working with folks. If it were just the city, it would be a complete mess because there just isn't enough resources and capacity at the city to handle the whole thing. Fortunately, there are all these organizations mm-hmm. in town
yeah.
dealing with various aspects of it, and I think that's really what has made this really livable here as we work our way through it. We also are not alone. Every city in the United States, every city practically in the world has this problem. So it's a difficult one, and one that we're not going to give up on. We are going to continue, if it's one person at a time, getting them out of that situation. A homeless person, the kind of homeless we deal with what are defined as the hard to house. They have health, mental health, addiction, probably a felony and bad credit. These are the, and they've been on the street for 10 to 15 years. That's who we're moving into housing. That's the group that I, when I looked at this, I realized nobody's helping those folks. So we needed to step in and do some work. We've now housed almost 150 people in that, which has wraparound social services. 95% of them have stayed in the program. We've now had our first person. It's been around for about a year and a half. We've now had our first person who comes out of that program who has purchased his own home.
No.
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic.
By golly. I'm very proud of this program. It's the only program I've heard of. It's called Housing First. It's the only program I've heard of that really solves the problem. And by golly, if we weren't there doing this, those people faced essentially the likelihood of dying by the time they're 52. I mean, this is not something that, this is a real kind of humanitarian problem.
Likelihood of dying before we get out of February.
Yeah, this February.
All right, we got to take a break. We're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem. Dave and I will continue the rest of the hour. We'll see if the mayor wants to continue to join us or take off and do his next meeting. All right, so stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN, and Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center. Whoops, I just almost spilled my drink over there.
Oh, you can't drink in studio, Dave.
No, never, never have drinks in the studio. Wanted to let you know, too, thanks to Jeff for texting me this, an accident, Highway 22 going east just before Gaffin Road. Try and take an alternate route there if you can. Could be a while before it gets cleaned up. All right.
Oh, my. All right. Well, welcome back to Newsmakers. We want to thank Mayor Chuck Bennett for joining us today, Tuesday, and talking a little bit about the budget.
I always enjoy when he comes in.
Yeah. I like the fact that he's an even-keeled guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has his opinions, and occasionally he gets fired up. But
like you.
he's just like me, right?
He is, pretty much, yeah.
So, but he's pragmatic. You know, mm-hmm. Sometimes. And one thing I disagree on the mayor is the funding of the fire station in West Salem. So back in 2008, we had a fire bill, a fire bond, and we built a second station. We knew at the time there were not enough calls. You know how me, and I'm a slave to numbers.
Yes.
There were not enough calls to warrant a fire station there. However, we also knew that that's where all the growth was, well, most of the growth is going to happen in Salem, and we needed to secure a piece of real estate, and we had the funding to do so. So ahead of time, we're trying to get ahead of the curve, and we built a fire station.
That was smart thinking.
Which they opened with part-time hours. They weren't open 24 hours a day, and at least closed due to budget constraints.
Oh, wow.
Now they are restoring that to full-time service, so two fire stations in West Salem. I believe that the numbers still don't show that the number of calls that they go out on, because you got to keep in mind these are newer houses. We're not having as many problems with fires. Anyway, the number of calls probably doesn't warrant a whole second staffed station.
How big is West Salem?
It's over 35,000 people.
Okay. They need two stations.
All right. Well.
And it's getting bigger.
It is. I'm not saying that they don't need two stations.
They don't have a third bridge for another fire truck to get over there. Come on now.
Now you're just trying to make me mad. So I'm just saying that potentially we should be working into fully staffing that station, that it should be there during high call volume hours, but not 24 hours a day of full fire crew. So especially under budget constraints where, you know, it's either are we perhaps overspending on fire in this one specific place where the needs could have been used for police.
Right. Where older homes are. More chance of fire. Is that what you're saying?
No, of police instead of fire.
Oh.
All right. Gotcha. Anyway.
All right.
And I know my conservative friends are mad at me, but I'm somewhat that fatalistic thing about PERS that they all want the city to go do something about it, and I don't think the city has anything that they can do about it. I just don't.
It's
they want the mayor to
thing.
Go down to the state and testify and demand relief.
Yeah.
And not just cry, hey, you know, we're subject to this and blah, blah, blah. There was an article today or yesterday about how PERS, Public Employee Retirement System, if the governor got her $2 billion in new revenue, and how much of that is not going to go into the classroom.
Right.
It's going to go into PERS.
It is.
It's a little bit like squeezing a balloon. Or the shell game, right?
Well, yeah.
Where, yes, okay, it's not going to go in the classroom potentially. It's going to all go backfill this horrible PERS liability. However, that does mean that we're not going to take more money away from schools and, you know, have to take it out of the classroom.
True.
So does the money go into the classroom? No.
No.
But does it allow the state to continue? It's a mess.
It's allowing the state to backfill their PERS.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because I've never seen any measure or bond or anything like that they said, oh, this is going to be used for books or, you know, instruments or anything like that. Like a 3-year levy that happened way back when my daughter was in high school.
Yeah. Some communities use levies, certainly for public safety, like Polk County does.
But I asked her 2 years into it. It was a 3-year thing. 2 years into it. Have you seen any improvements in your classroom? She goes, no, we're still sharing books that were copied from another one.
Mm.
I'm like, and you're sharing desks too. That wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah.
It was supposed to give them more new books and more desks and things like that in the classroom, and it didn't happen. So I lost my faith in that one.
Uh-huh. Understandable. It's got to be accountability. And one of the things that's very frustrating with the school district is, you know, one, how much money we just passed in a bond measure as a community for Salem-Keizer Schools without building a school. Over $600 million, right?
That's renovating schools, though, right?
They are renovating schools and adding some capacity, but you don't even get any brand new ground-up schools to handle
Do they need one?
Crowding and... well, they're trying to handle crowding by expanding the capacity of these schools. But a lot of it's deferred maintenance, which 10 years ago we had this argument about, hey, if you need $245 million, I think it was, in 2008, 2009, for deferred maintenance, you have to promise us you're going to start scheduling maintenance.
Yes.
Don't just defer it and then cry, the kids don't have heat and the kids don't have new windows. Because they want the money to go to the into the classrooms in the form of teachers and smaller class sizes. So that's always the tug. I mean, that's the flip side of the public schools budgeting, is that when everybody tells us the priority, they want a smaller class size, they want resources in the classroom, and not, hey, could you put some money aside for an HVAC system in 15 years from now?
Right.
Can you set some money aside for window replacements?
Well, that's a no-brainer.
And so, but then this... maintenance gets deferred, and that, you know,
because somebody borrowed it,
and then they come back to the voters and say, hey, we want to go in debt again to catch up, or, you know, $600 million of catch up and expansion of deferred maintenance.
Let me go back out to my money tree.
Yeah. So that's how it happens when it comes to public budgeting and the pressures that are involved.
Wow.
And I don't like it. I mean, you know, I know a lot of people that are business owners and they're commercial building owners, and they say, hey, I can't not do it on this asset and then go to the voters later and say, oh, I need a new HVAC system.
Right.
Or I need new paving, and everybody else has to account for those and pay for it as you go and have a sinking fund, as they would call it, so that you can do these things as they cycle. All right. For an example, the city of Salem, they have a fund. Every department contributes that has a vehicle into the motor vehicle fund.
Mm-hmm.
So they have everyone scheduled when it's going to be replaced and how much money it's going to take to replace them. So when a police car ends the use of it, at the end of its useful lifespan, the money is in the bank to buy the new car. That's the way it should be done.
Yeah. Why doesn't the school district do that?
Because of the public pressures and budgeting, and everybody wants... fewer kids in the classroom, more teachers, teacher's aides, teacher's coaches, all those things. So, anyway,
In a perfect world,
I'm really, really concerned about the city of Salem in terms of how's it going to spend $25 per hundred to support a PERS, and getting worse, as the mayor was saying. It's going to continue to slope up and get worse for 20 years. And how is the city going to solve a homeless crisis that no community on the face of the earth has been able to solve? That's a lot to ask. That's a lot to ask. I'm not saying the city shouldn't do anything, or we're not frustrated and we don't want action.
Right.
But where's the money come from? Where does the expertise come from? Where's the program to emulate? It's tough. At least they're doing something. And as the mayor said, 150 people are not on the streets in tents that were there a year and a half ago.
Is it just me, or has this problem been getting worse over the last couple of years? Because I don't remember seeing that many homeless.
Worse. Everybody.
What do you think is causing that?
Well, at least
housing prices.
Housing prices are one of them.
Rent.
I mean,
rent
and rent. Obviously, the economy is in great condition. Anybody willing and able to work is typically going to find.
I've never seen so many help wanted signs in my life.
True. From retail to services,
right. So
it's all over.
Somewhere in the homeless thing, it's got to be a choice.
For some. And some of it, like the mayor says, it's addiction and it's mental illness. It's the big one. So this is going to be controversial. Sorry. But
They took apologize at first. Yeah.
A lot of people felt with their good hearts years ago that we should mainstream people that have some of these issues. We should get them out of institutions. We shouldn't sideline them. We try to mainstream them. And then when we get them out of institutions or out of halfway houses or out of group living arrangements, you end up with people that don't have the life skills and they end up on the street. So there's a school of thought that we've created this problem by feeling for these individuals with addiction problems, with mental health issues and this and that, because they tried to mainstream them, and we mainstream them right onto the street. Okay. Second, hey, and if you're listening and you're an expert in this, you know, give me a call and we'll talk. We'll have you on. We'll talk about it. Second, and I know this to be true, that Oregon inadvertently competes with other states to attract the indigent.
What?
And we've mentioned this before. If you have benefits and they're richer than the state next door, people are going to float into your state.
True.
All right. So a person very close to me was in social services, and she goes into a home visit with somebody with a DHS file and services, right? And there's her sister. Oh, my sister just got here. She got here from Arizona. Oh, are you visiting? No, I moved here. Well, why did you move here? Do you have a job? No, I don't have a job. Why did you move here? Well, I heard that I could arrive on Wednesday. On Thursday, I'd have food stamps. I heard Oregon's great for getting services right away. So we're competing by providing, food stamp service and housing services and emergency services and funding and da 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 da. You got all these human resource or human needs programs. Well, suddenly you're the state that everybody knows if you go there, then you're going to get more help than you are in Arizona or Nevada or probably California. And inadvertently, you're like saying, hey, this is the place to go because they have the best benefits for the indigent, for all of these issues. So
I'm also familiar with this because my brother was homeless here in Oregon, moved to Las Vegas. And literally the day after he got there, they gave him a bus ticket back to Oregon.
No.
Yeah.
Holy cow. We got to hear this.
They bus him back here.
Oh, Dave's got a hot story right there. Yeah. All right. Stick with us. We got one more segment here on Newsmakers. You're listening to Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent Hart with Dave Bourne, and we're talking about social services and actually how Oregon can potentially be inviting its own problem, inviting people to come to Oregon to be on social services because the benefits get so rich. And I know it's not purposeful, but that is a way that Oregon is basically competing with other states. So, hey, please send us your indigent. Please send us your unemployed. Please send us the people that need human services because our benefits that we provide are so rich. So,
and it affects a lot of things, too.
So you're saying that your brother was moved to Nevada.
He lived here and was and ended up being homeless. He lost his apartment here. I couldn't help him. But I gave him a lift to the bus station, and he had enough money and took a bus down to Las Vegas. Thought he'd be able to, you know, live down there. And they literally, the next day, gave him a bus ticket and said, we can't help you. Please go back to where you came from.
And he was applying for services and help.
Yeah. And they gave him a bus ticket instead and said, go home.
Wow.
And they put him on a bus, and he was back here literally 3 days later. And he called me and said, I'm back. I'm like, what happened in Las Vegas? And he goes, yeah, they gave me a bus ticket back home. And I'm like, wow, okay. Well, he lives in Phoenix now, and he's actually turned his life around and has a nice job and everything. But it's taken him forever. As far as I know, over his lifespan, he's now 40-something. He's been homeless too many times. Lost everything.
Wow. But he's doing okay now?
He's doing much better now.
All right. So, yeah, we believe in a step or a hand up and not a hand out. And, yeah. And it's shocking how people in Oregon, we tend to be in this bubble of this is how we do things. Or because we're a one-party state,
Yeah. You
know, we have this perspective. And the people who are elected in the majority, they have this perspective, like this is the way to do it. And then, you know, and there are a lot of parts of the country that's not the way they do it. This is not how
no,
they think.
Yes, no.
Which gets me to a topic on top of Brent's mind is how many things we're talking about in Newsmakers that they're talking about at the Capitol that only Oregon is doing, right? We think we'll be the only state in the nation that has statewide rent control,
right?
And now in the news, we want to be the only state in the nation reducing the voting age to 16. What were you thinking about at 16, Dave Bourne?
I was not thinking about voting. No.
I think I was thinking about high school sports. Maybe some homework, and probably high school girls.
Yeah, it was music, girls, and getting my homework done so I could go see the girls.
That's right. So I don't know.
I was actually working at 16.
I'm not a big fan. They lowered the voting age to 18, in large part due to the nationwide.
Yeah, well, so, the military. If you can join the military at 18, you can vote.
Good argument.
It is a great argument.
If you can die for your country, you should have an ability to vote and have a say in it.
Absolutely.
16's a little low.
No, that's ridiculous.
I don't really understand.
Who came up with that? I want to know who authored that bill.
Yeah. And actually, don't you have a lot of things to do that you know are important and that might have a chance of passing? Because this has been floated in other states, other places, other times. It's not going to pass.
No.
But why are we even talking about it?
Yeah,
I
want to know who wrote it up.
Government. You know, a lot of times, if you're not familiar, a legislator will introduce a bill on behalf of, as a favor of somebody, you know, who's a donor, somebody who's a supporter, somebody who's, you know, the organization they support, that kind of thing. I'm like, well, as a courtesy, I'll introduce this bill for you, and they'll sponsor the bill coming in because, you know, they can't sponsor every bill, but
no.
They pick and choose. And yeah.
This is not one that should have been even floated.
There's so many things to do. Want to spend more time worrying about solving PERS in the next 16 years instead of having 16 year olds.
Solve PERS, solve the homeless.
Solve PERS again.
Yeah. And the social services need to be revamped. They're supposed to be a crutch to help people between things like the jobs or whatever and not to live on.
Well, they are talking about when it comes to voting at 16 for it to go to the general election in 2020. There's a Democrat in Portland, a representative Democrat in Portland that thinks that.
Who was
with
it?
High school. That was, oh, a senator. Senator Fagan. Senator Fagan in Portland. Press conference with high schoolers, and they want to have a say and this and that. So, all right, we've only got 1 minute, so let's tease what's going to happen later this week. Tomorrow we'll have Shani Starr. This is a really, really important program. Court appointed special advocates, CASA. A lot of times people see the acronym and don't really understand what they do, but you can basically be a person that goes to court on behalf of a child whose parents really cannot be that advocate. or shouldn't be that advocate.
Interesting.
Yeah, and they're volunteers, and they don't have to be attorneys. And Shaney Starr will tell us all about that tomorrow. Later in the week, we're going to talk to somebody who's doing something very cool in Turner. Turner is going to be a very cool city. There's some neat things happening there in housing and people investing there. And that's something I'm looking forward to. And, of course, on and we'll talk to the Vulcanus on Friday. Hopefully on Thursday, we're going to talk a little bit more about the legislature and doing things that no other state is doing. Thanks for joining us, Newsmakers. Have a great day. This is Brent.
And Dave.
For 1430 KYKN, Salem's listening.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.